Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. This is the fortnight where we will be going into details of the Sanatana Sarathi, that is a new series we have started, and we are very eager and keen to go through it because the Sanatana Sarathi is a wonderful, if we can say, assembly of articles and articles of all varieties. It includes Bhagwan's own writings. Apart from that, we have stories, we have understanding of Swami's teachings. More than anything else, we also have a timeline of Swami's visits to different places. All these and much more are included in the Sanatana Sarathi in each issue. So, we started off a fortnight before on the first ever issue of the Sanatana Sarathi, which was the February 1958 issue. And today, we will be going into the February 98 issue, a few parts which are still left out, and then we will go to the March 1958 issue. You know, as it always happens, there is a cut-off time when the issue has to go around, and Kasturi Garu kept that date as 16th of every month. Therefore, in the February issue of the Sanatana Sarathi, we get updated about things that happened up till the 10th of February, so also for the March, so also for the April, till the 10th of that month is what is contained in that month's issue. And that's why though the Sanatana Sarathi was released on the occasion of Shivratri in 1958, Shivratri happened to fall on the 16th of February, and that's why it gets mentioned in the March 1958 issue. So that is what we will be going into today, and trust me, dear listeners, it's beautiful, it's enchanting. There are some very, very beautiful points. We are grateful to Swami for having given us this inspiration and idea to delve into the Sanatana Sarathi and go through it issue by issue. So, that is what we will be doing. And now, without further ado, offering our most humble and loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, let's also welcome Brother Prem to join us. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind and Sairam to all our listeners. Yes, absolutely. This is, in many ways, one thing is we get to read many articles written by people who have been very close to Swami. Also, we get to follow Swami in a sense, because Professor Kasturi, as we all know, for much of Swami's travels has been a part of Swami's entourage. We've seen that he's been the translator of Swami's discourses, so he is also the best suited person to give us a synopsis of whatever Swami has conveyed in discourses on certain occasions. And also being a constant resident of Prashanthi Nilayam also can give us an overview of the many events and festivals that happen, and that's what Sanatana Sarathi is. Of course, we are leaving out consciously the most important part of Sanatana Sarathi, that Swami's own writings, and we've explained why we are doing that. But even putting that aside, there's so many precious treasures and gems that we can cull out from these episodes. As Arvind was saying, that we did leave out a small portion of what was left in the first issue. Some of it is the long article written by Raja Reddy Garu. We went through half of it, but there is a second half which we'll go through in when we're going through the second part of this article in the second issue.
March 1958 issue.
I think we'll combine those two and go through. Apart from that, there was an article by a devotee by name Veeramani. A very general article, there's nothing much to really speak about it, but the general sense of what he was saying is again conveyed in, I think, many of Swami's discourses. One sense that one gets when you're going through these many articles is it's also a reflection of what Swami must be telling them in interviews, in discourses, in personal interactions, because you can see a lot of overtones of Swami's Prema Vahini and other Vahinis in this article also, where he speaks of the stark difference between the rural mindset of people and that of the modern world. He says how Indian society was primarily agrarian, that gave a lot of time for people to contemplate. And this is something, again, you will see in discourses that Swami would give when he is addressing villagers. That Swami would say that, you know, you have a lot of time in your hand, and the culture is so deeply embedded in the way you lead your life, and you have to preserve this. Swami would say that, you know, modernity is going to enter your lives at some point in time, but you have to preserve this. And there is a certain sense of that in the article that person has written. And of course, the importance of bhakti, right? What one can do with time is one can dwell into the Upanishads, and one can dwell into this contemplation of who am I and all of that. But he says that the role that bhakti plays in the life of the village folk is itself an example of how, you know, when you talk about the society being agrarian, which means that you're so much dependent on the natural forces. There's so much of uncertainty in your life. And how love and devotion in the life of these people has been a bedrock of their peace of mind. And he says that is an example for all of us. And he speaks of that. So that is an article by one Mr. Veeramani.
You know, Prem, when we actually read these things, one interesting thing that happens in our own mindset is, see, the author writes saying that this is how ancient India was and this is the modern times. We get to see what the modern times were perceived as, say, 60 years back. Because for us, those are now the old times, the bygone times. And we get an idea, and we get how to compare between the modern times we consider now to the modern times considered then. For instance, when he says that majority of India is agrarian. Today, when we look at agriculture as an employment providing or livelihood providing thing, we realize that its importance has fallen in terms of what it contributes to India's gross domestic produce, or GDP as they say. Agriculture is only 30% of India's GDP. And yet, if we look through the other side, we realize that even to this day, between 50 to 60% of India's population is still directly connected to agriculture,
right,
and the related activities to agriculture. So, you easily understand why the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, because though the same number of people still depend on agriculture even to this day, agriculture's contribution to India's gross domestic produce is reducing. Therefore, it shows that there is the other rich or slightly better off people who are getting better off and getting richer. So, reading such articles also gives us a sense of how the country has moved in the last 40-50 years, and it shows that the message that Swami gives holds good for all times, because even to this day, when we walk around the villages, we see that bhakti is still alive. It's only in the villages. Thankfully, modernization has not wiped that out. For instance, even in Puttaparthi, we see once in a couple of months, there is a night-long singing that goes on. And and these are not professional singers. These are farmers, barbers, and day-to-day people who come together and spend the whole night. It goes on till almost 3:30 or 4 in the morning, starting at 10:30 or 11 at night. They sing out and enact. I mean, the singing is not of some supreme quality, but definitely the feelings count more, I guess, because without having genuine love and passion to do this, there is no way you will do it for 4 hours at a stretch. I don't think they are paid for it. They do it, and people gather and watch it. So even in a modern day and age like this, in a town that has modernized so much, you know, Puttaparthi has transformed so much in the last 50 years, when we see such things still alive in the neighboring villages, we realize the meaning of the term Nitya Nutana and Satya Sanatana, in a sense, because though the trends and styles are changing, bhakti and all still to this day thrives and lives in the villages in India.
Right. And of course, the other reason I was saying that some of these articles have an overtone of what Swami himself has been saying is, this was written way back in 58, he also mentions that, you know, there is a slow spread of atheism, and so not merely atheism, the idea that religion does not have place in education, does not have place in modern society itself, which is more and more coming into the cities in India. In 68, when Swami inaugurated the first campus of, which later became the campus of the university, in the college in Anandapur, Swami says this. I want to correct this aberration that is happening, that there is a separation of education from belief in God and love for God. So you could see that. So that was one article by a devotee by name Veeramani. There's another article by a devotee by name Sharada Menon. We did make a mention of that last time also. It speaks about the festival of Shivratri. The issue is the Shivratri release. So how Shivratri is celebrated in different parts of the country. And I think that's a short summary of that article. And then the issue concludes with Professor Kasturi giving a small snippet about how life in Puttaparthi is, and it's titled Holy Days in Puttaparthi. And he just says that, maybe I'll just four lines, we'll read it out. He says, at Prashanti Nilayam, Puttaparthi, every day is a holy day, for the devotees are inspired and elevated by the chanting of the pranava, the recitation of prayers, the bhajans, and above all, by the darshan of the Bhagwan and his discourses. Navratri, however, attracts devotees from all quarters. Besides special archana and puja, each day is marked by programs like discourses, music, kavi sammelan, children's feet, the feeding and clothing of the poor, etc., climaxing in the Maha Abhisheka and other ceremonies of Vijayadashami. Every year on November 23rd, the birthday of the Bhagwan is celebrated with great rejoicing. Mahashivratri too is a great day for the eager throngs of devotees who come to Prashanti Nilayam to share in all-night vigil and bhajans, to have the darshan of Bhagwan, and to make the auspicious day more auspicious, witnessing the unique miracle of Shivalingodbhava. So this is before Shivratri, as you rightly said. So what happened in that year's Shivratri, he's going to mention in the next issue. But a short summary of the various festivals that are celebrated. Those years, the Vibhuti Abhishekam used to happen in Navratri, right? During the Vijayadashmi day it used to happen. I think that's the mention he makes.
And later on it got shifted to Shivratri.
Shivratri, right.
In fact, if we look at these early issues of Sanatan Sarathi, just we are now just entering the second one, the March 1958 Sanatan Sarathi. We realize that unlike the issues that came much later on, at least the other contributing authors, other than Swami, that is Kasturi Garu and all others, including Raja Reddy, all of them are writing keeping in mind that the readers will possibly not know much about Swami, will be curious to know. And those were the days when very few books were available about Bhagwan. And most probably, most of those who are keen or eager to know about Swami would possibly subscribe to this magazine. And that's why, if we look at it, the two-part article with which Raja Reddy Garu is writing is called The Facts About Babaji. Kasturi also, in his different articles, is giving a brief about what happens during various festivals and all that. So that is the tone and nature of the articles. Even the other articles written by Shri Kondal Rao and Ramaswamy in this March 1958 edition speaks about Swami's general philosophy as an introductory course for a new person. So that looks like the general theme and tone in all these early issues. So, dear listeners, when we go through now the March 1958, it's not as if we are going exactly article by article. We are going in a flow which will definitely encompass all the articles. So,
I think before that, I just wanted to add, there was one query from one of our listeners about where do you access these old articles? So I think for those who are interested, there is a website called SaiReflections.org, or you can go to SanatanSarathi.org. It's been managed by the Books and Publications Division. All the past issues are available as PDF downloads. So in fact, if any of you want to go through these articles in your own time, or you want to follow it even as we are doing the satsang, I think that's the place you can look for. All the articles are available for download. You can download and follow it as we are going through them.
I think, Prem, you should keep that in mind, and we should make this announcement after every Sanand Sarthi Satsang, because in case somebody is tuning in late, they will also know where to get it from.
Right.
So as we begin the March 1958, one interesting feature we see in many of these issues is towards the end, Professor Kasturi gives a summary of what all happened in March. So since it's coming out on March 16th, in the March issue I saw that he has written even March 16th to 20th, 21st to 24th. I was wondering, how is it possible that he has written about something which has not yet happened, because on March 16th the issue would have come. It's possibly the plans would have already been made and Swami is going to go there. Either that, or in March the February issue is coming and in April the March issue comes. That is one thing we will have to check. But anyway, from the 1st of March to the 4th of March, Swami was at Chittur. And this is mentioned towards the end of the March 1958 issue. But in the issue is a brief of what happened at Chittur. Very, very interesting. Swami arrived there on the first evening, possibly, evening or early night. And on the second, Swami inaugurated what is called the Baba Block, which consists of the three big halls, Ashoka Hall, Venkatesha Hall and Unnamalai Hall, all of these in the premises of the B.S. Kannan High School. And interestingly, that school is now a junior college and a college as well, which exists even to this day. And I was just curious and went through some of the Google reviews for the school, and it has got really, really good reviews. People fondly recollect their days in the school. It's a 100-year-old school and college. So it'll be interesting if we can possibly visit Chittur, which comes a few miles away from the border between Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu states. So there Swami inaugurated the Baba Block consisting of these three halls, and in the evening he delivered the divine discourse from the same area. And on the third, something amazing happened.
Right. I think on the third, this again must be a practice that we will see in many of the later articles also. Because on the 3rd of March, Kasturi Garu writes that Bhagwan arrived at the same decorated pandal and allowed every one of the close to a thousand or more who had come to come personally to the dais and offer their homage to Swami. And Swami must have spoken a word or two, given Padnamaskar. Because I think this was also practiced even in Patti during festivals.
Birthday, they would
Swami's
come
birthday.
And
Swami would give prasadam personally. A laddu would be personally given by Swami as they come up for Padnamaskar. And this was a practice after the birthday celebrations when people would begin leaving. So Swami was doing that. A few thousand people, Swami gave this blessing.
And I think it must have easily taken an hour or two in that itself. You know, 1,000 people have to come and spend even 30 seconds near Swami. It would have taken off 2-3 hours. So that
imagine, this also gives a glimpse of how Swami's story cannot be covered at all. 1,000 people coming up to Swami, even a few seconds, we can only imagine what might have conspired, what life-changing event might have occurred in those few seconds. And it's impossible to cover all of that.
Absolutely. Because each one of them will be a story in itself. And every day like this, Swami has created stories.
Right.
We are far, 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 far behind in documenting them. And in that, on that third evening as well, Swami delivered a discourse in the BZ High School. That's what is recorded in Sanand Sarthi. And a little search on the internet revealed BZ High School to be Bangaru Zamindari High School. Once again, this school has got amazing reviews, people fondly recollecting their teachers there and how they have received value education there. So you see, you know, when we say Swami's value education, we in our mind, we somehow think of it as Sathya Sai schools. But that's not what it is. Sathya Sai value education has become part of many schools which possibly we are not aware of without the name of Sathya Sai. And that is what I could make out reading the reviews of this Bangaru Zamindari High School, which was built in 1885. So it is about 120, 130 year old school. And in that school, Swami delivered his discourse that evening. And with that, the visit to Chittur concluded, after which Swami left to Bangalore. And he was there in Bangalore for 4 days, from the 4th of March to the 8th of March. And after that, Swami went to Madras. That is what is recorded in the Sanatan Sarthi. But the details of that Madras visit, I think we will be discussing in the next issue.
Swami came back to Parthi because March 4th to 8th, Swami was in Bangalore.
Yes.
And March 22nd, Swami leaves for Madras. So I think it's understood that Swami came back
to Puttaparthi.
To Parthi, and he was here in that. And Shivratri must have happened in between.
Shivratri happened in February. This confusion, dear listeners, will keep happening because it is recorded in the March issue, because on the 16th it is released.
Right.
So there is details of the Shivratri. The 16th of February 1958 was Shivratri, and it began with the Prashanti flag being hoisted on top of the Prashanti Nilayam Mandir. Now the Prashanti flag is a yellow flag with the Sarvadharma symbol in middle, radiating orange lines. It almost looks like a very, very similar to the scarf of the lady Sevadal. The gent Sevadal have a dark blue, light blue combination scarf, while the lady Sevadal have a yellow-orange combination scarf with the Sarvadharma symbol. So the Prashanti flag consisted of that, and that was what was hoisted by Bhagwan before the first ever Sanatan Sarthi was released. And because it was Shivratri, in the noon time there was the Sphatika Linga Puja. Now, this Sphatika is a semi-precious gemstone. Usually, it's a pure form of quartz, and it is believed to have multiple medicinal, spiritual, vibrational, healing properties as well. And in fact, we get Sphatika rosaries also. We wear it because it is Sphatika, that crystal is a very good conductor of heat, so it's believed that it extracts body heat. If not anything else, that definitely it does. And we see a lot of Sphatika lingams in multiple places. In fact, I was reading about the world's largest Sphatika lingam.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a Shiva temple. It's called the Kadavul Shiva temple. And it's located in the islands of Hawaii in USA. in the Kauai Island. Kauai is one among the 6 or 7 islands that make up Hawaii. And that Sphatika lingam in the Kadavul temple is about 3.5 feet in height, weighing about 320 kilograms, and it's the largest single gemstone with those six faces like that. So Sphatika comes in different sizes. So in the noon time there was a Sphatika Linga Puja, and it concludes early in the evening, because late in the evening and into night was the unforgettable Lingodbhavam.
Right. And so it says that in the evening, after Swami gave a discourse on the significance of Shivratri, the bhajan started around 9:40. Professor Kasturi records that 9 lingams simultaneously materialized and emanated from him.
Lingodbhavam.
Right, Lingodbhavam. 9 lingams. You know, we've seen Swami doing 1 or sometimes even 2, and we've seen how painful it is, of course, for Swami to do it and for us to watch it. 9 lingams, one after the other. And that is what would draw the crowds even then. And Professor Kasturi goes on to write that later
the Akhand Bhajan would start.
Continued, and he says that there were programs, right?
Exactly. So after this discourse and Lingodbhavam, this is what would happen later, as we know in the Shivratri also, post 1998-99, where Swami will give the discourse and Swami will sing the bhajan. And that bhajan that Swami sings would become the first bhajan of the Akhanda Bhajan.
Right.
But in 1958, the time the Lingodbhavam got over, it was almost 10 p.m. at night, because 9:40 the lingams have emerged. At 10 o'clock, there's a concert, vocal concert by B.V. Raman and B.V. Lakshmanan. I think they are from the Venkatagiri Kingdom, is it? Or Madras?
One of them was in Delhi, and I think, yeah, they did come through, I think, that Venkatagiri connection only. And it is again through them, Mrs. Kamala Sarthi comes, and we have the other Rani Ma, on whom we have a series. All of them have that connection with B.V. Raman and B.V. Lakshman. I think they are also, in a way, some sources tell us that they were the ones who composed the Mangala Aarti that we sing today.
Okay.
In those days it was different. So,
but we definitely know that we have a few recordings of Swami
singing along with them. Right, and they have given many, many concerts in Swami's presence.
So that night, that evening, they gave a concert, and there are a few other Vidwans mentioned.
Right. In a part to Sri Saraswati Bai, she performed a katha on Sita Kalyanam, and Vidwan's B.V. Raman Lakshman, of course, and Vidwan Bhuvaneshwaraya of Bangalore, who was a violin exponent,
and
then Vidwan Parani Subramanya Pillai on Mridangam. So these were the ones who gave the, there must have been a typical Carnatic concert.
After which the bhajans began.
The bhajans continued.
And they concluded at 6:30 a.m. on the next day, that is 17th, with Mahamangal Arati. And again, after that, people definitely would have gone and taken rest.
The evening again.
Yes, they would have taken rest for the morning. That's what Swami would tell us also, you know. Here during Shivratri, he would come in the morning and when prasadam distributed, he would indicate with his hand, eat nicely and go and sleep. So that is what I think people did, because after that on the 17th evening again, there was a Jhulotsavam. What Professor Kasturi records as the Uyalotsava. I think that is his Kannada coming in, because in Kannada it's called Uyala. Maybe okay. It's also in Telugu, it's
Telugu
called
also
Uyala also.
Right.
So the Uyalotsava, where Swami is on the swing and he's gently swinging to the tunes of the concert again. This time kirtans and bhajans by B.V. Raman and Lakshmanan, and I think there was one more Vidwan.
Chandrasekharayya of Mandya.
Mandya, huh.
So he was also one more. Vidwan K.S. Chandrasekharayya.
So he also joined them, and that was the concert that happened, and there were about 3,000 people attending, and that is how the Shivratri celebrations concluded. On that note, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break, and on the other side of the break, we will go into a very beautiful article, the second part of which is there in the March issue, and the first part, which was in the February issue, by Raja Reddy Garu. It's amazing. All of that will be coming after this break.
Yeah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in the second issue of Sanatan Sarthi, but as we said, there is an article by Raja Reddy Garu even in the second issue. And we were going through the one in the first issue midway, so we thought we'll complete that, and then as we go forward, we'll go to the second one as well. Even as we were going through the article last time, we could see that the tone of the article was to reveal to the world the nature of Swami, the nature of Swami's miracles, and in many ways to refute some of the arguments which are given against them, the concept of how one must not perform miracles that leads to one's sadhana being wasted, and that argument which he gives about Swami's miracles. And one of the points that we made, the interesting thing he says is, if you were to call any of these Maya, any of the objects created by Swami as Maya, it is only as much Maya as you and I are. So he says that it is Maya, but it is as much Maya as you and I are. I recall a beautiful incident which one of Swami's students was saying, where Swami played a prank with him. Swami materialized something and gave it to him. It vanished, and then again it came. Something like, I don't remember the exact details of that. But at the end of it, Swami told him something which was very, very profound. Swami told him that, finally gave him the object. I think it was a ring or a bracelet or something. And Swami said, remember, this is also Maya and that is also Maya. So it remaining also is Maya, it vanishing also is Maya. So Swami said, you always remember that, and you should remember not to get lost in that.
When you say this, I am reminded of an incident that happened at home. It was very similar to this, and I learned this lesson in a apparently difficult but later beautiful manner, where, you know, there was the appearance of, on Shankranti day, there was the appearance of Vibhuti from a photograph at home, and that time I was in the mandir, and as soon as I was reaching home, I got a call from my father who said that, you know, Vibhuti has appeared, and what is special is this Vibhuti that has appeared is also sweet. And it is a rule at home that if at all Vibhuti appears from any photograph, we let the Vibhuti be for at least 24 hours so that, you know, we see to it till our heart's content, and then we clear it so that in case some fresh shower comes, space is available. That was how it was a few years back when Vibhuti was appearing. But when I went home there, the Vibhuti that my father said had come was not there at all, and I was really upset as to why he cleared it so fast. Mm-hmm. So I went and told him what was the need to clear it up in a hurry. He said, no, I didn't clear it. And then, you know, he was so thrilled. He said, ah, wow, what a leela it is. I said, what is the leela? He's saying that Vibhuti, it vanished, right? That's the leela of the Lord. And, you know, that was the first time it struck in my head that just like appearance of Vibhuti is a leela of the Lord, the disappearance too is the leela of the Lord. Just that we are not ready to accept it. We want only, you know, when Swami miraculously grants us health, we take that as a leela of the Lord. But if health is not granted, we're not ready to accept it as a leela of the Lord. We think of it as a refusal from Swami's part, or why is the Lord not listening to our prayers. So I think that point is subtly highlighted by Raja Reddy Garu when he says that if you think that what he's creating is Maya, what he's making is a show of his power, then what about you and me? We are also Maya. And we have to remember that this is coming from a person who is been through the Ramakrishna order before. And it is especially strong because Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to often say that these miracles and these powers, siddhis are distractions for the siddhas or for the spiritual practitioners. So with that background, coming from that background, if Raja Reddy Garu is able to say this, one can only imagine the impact of Swami's presence and his living with Swami, what must have happened, because he's speaking from experience. In fact, in the second part of the article, mm-hmm. he mentions very clearly, he says, mind you, what I'm writing here, these are no figurative fibs penned merely to entertain the reader. These words are purely the outcome of personal experience and rational judgment. No, not a word of it is falsely written.
Right. And in fact, it cannot ever be overstated the kind of feeling one gets when Swami is closely observed. Now, there are many, many people whom we have, in the past few days, thanks to the lockdown and everything, we have so many satsangs happening all around the place, and I think it gives us the opportunity to listen to so many people whom we have not heard before, even though we have lived with them many times. You know, I'm listening to some of the experiences of my own classmates and juniors, which I've never heard, even though we've sat and gossiped for, you know, hours on end about Swami. No, not just gossip about others. Even though we've spoken about Swami, we've not got to hear about some of these. So people who speak about when they've observed Swami, they can say that Swami really lives that message. You know, when Swami speaks about simplicity, when Swami speaks about not having any attachment to anything, Swami being a stickler to discipline, you can see that Swami is literally living that every moment. It is not at all, it is effortless for him, one thing. It is not that he's saying that, oh, I'm saying this, people are looking at me, so I should live. For Swami, it is effortless. Swami says, this is the best way to live, right? And he's living it. You know, it's not like for you to see I'm doing it this way. It's not even like that. I think for some of us, it's like that. Oh, we are being observed, or we are Swami student. We have to consciously do it.
The way we behave in public and the way we behave in private is different. Whereas for Swami, it is not.
Right. It's so natural for Swami. And when such statements come from somebody like Raja Reddy Garu, you can see that it is someone who spends hours and hours observing Swami. You can see that that's how it is. And for the few minutes we have observed, we have seen, when Swami places a glass on the table, there is a certain way he'll do it. When Swami opens a letter, there's a certain way he'll do it. There is a gentleness and a firmness in everything that he does. And I think that's what, it's so beautiful to read some of these things from when somebody like, you know, Raja Reddy, who writes all this.
When you say that, you know, Swami lives his own message, and that's why whatever he speaks or whatever he says makes such impact. In fact, I'm just tempted to go a little ahead, because this is precisely what Professor Kasturi documents in one of the articles in this issue, where he writes about his first Chitravati session. You know, we have all heard of Swami's sessions on the sands of Chitravati, and Professor Kasturi documents his first Chitravati session. And in that, actually, Professor Kasturi says that whatever Swami is saying is so melodious and beautiful for the ear to hear. We will go into details of that discourse later when we come to this article. But I just want to make a point that Professor Kasturi makes, that it is so beautiful for the ear to hear. It is possibly not in a logical flow. It's possibly not very analytical. Means you cannot put it in a structure saying this is how it flowed into this. But he says, just listening to it, you feel so light, you feel so happy, you feel so wonderful. I don't know how it is, it has to be experienced. It is not about the words spoken there, but it is Swami speaking the words. I feel that experience that Professor Kasturi got is also because of this fact that whatever Swami speaks is what Swami is. And Swami is pure love and selflessness. That is what Raja Reddy Garu writes. In fact, he writes that selflessness and desirelessness, these are the two qualities that distinguish God from man. And Swami embodies that. And because Swami embodies that, everything that he speaks is selfless and desireless. And that's why it makes that deep impact on the inner recesses of the heart. And speaking of heart, Prem, I am reminded of that incident that Raja Reddy Garu documents in the first part of his article.
Yes, I think we've heard this, but maybe we'll just read out those two paragraphs, and if there are more details, I think Swami, because it is mentioned even in Satyam Shyam Sundaram, if there are more details, you can add to that. Under a theme where he says he is the preserver, I think we were speaking about that. He says that, you know, we've heard stories of Gajendra Moksha and one call and Gajendra from Gajendra and Lord Vishnu rushed. He says that we've seen that multiple times, and I'm sure that even as we go through the various issues, we'll come through many such episodes. There's one episode that we will be covering today too, where he says there have been many occasions where Swami goes into a trance, and he says it is no rarity to see Swamiji going in trance to save his devotees from the disabling and highly dangerous paralytic and heart attacks, from fatal accidents and dreadful diseases, and even from desperate suicides. One example is that of Balapatabi. I think many times he tries to end his life, and Swami kind of goes into a trance, appears there in some form and gets him back.
And the other one is the famous recorded one of the Bhopal,
Bhopal incident,
RV man.
Right.
Where Swami comes as his friend and porter.
Multiple forms Swami takes.
Hmm.
So he writes, to cite one out of the many instances, it was about the end of July 1957. One evening, we were at Vashishta Guha near Rishikesh. Then Ganga Bhavani was quiet in her mood, so to speak, flowing swiftly and strong. So this is a reference to
River Ganga.
About 10 miles off the Guha was a sadhu seated on a stone, lost in meditation, just on the bank of the river. Deep in dhyana, he tumbled into the water and off the current carried him along. For him, it was all alike in a dream, until after a while later he regained his consciousness, only to notice his own self caught in a perilous situation, coming to a conclusion that it was all over with him and would soon have to face fatal shears. He began his prayer to the Paramatma, the Soul Supreme. It was this body that was beheld floating along the river near about the cave by a few of our party. But none of them did say it out then. The prayer must have reached its place and Bhagwan was off into the mood, away from normalcy. He had his palms one over the other as if enclosing something. And he was not out of that state of mind until some time after we returned from the cave. Then he began saying that some person in the party, Mr. S had seen it but revealed it to none. We heard him narrating the incident and Mr. S could only confirm it. It was to protect the sannyasi's heart from water that Swami had kept his palms closed. The sadhu was saved on the bank somewhere near Rishikesh, and that after about 30-mile float. If this does not mean preservation, what else does?
In fact, in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Professor Kasturi records a few more details where he says that this person floated till a place in Shivananda Nagar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Swami Shivananda at Rishikesh, he has his ashram and there a couple find him and they take him out of the water and offer coffee to him or something like that. So till then Swami had held his hands clasped in order to protect the heart of that yogi. And as Raja Reddy Garu records, there is that Mr. S, actually his name is mentioned, Subbarayudu, or I'm not able to recall now.
Okay.
But Swami looks at him and tell what you saw, don't feel shy. And then this person says, Swami, actually I thought it is inauspicious to mention such things, but what I saw was a dead body floating in the water. And Swami laughs out and says, no, that's not a dead body, that's a yogi in trance. The seat on which he was sitting got washed by the river and he didn't even realize, he just fell into the river and he was floating by. And the whole thing beautifully, Raja Reddy Garu.
In fact, he concludes that article by saying, again, something we've heard from Swami, but something that people like him must have witnessed over and over again. He says that, Swami says, call me by any name. You don't have to worship me in this form. You call in any name, I will come. So Swami says that, how can I tell people that you should come only to Puttaparthi, you can worship only me. Because when I am convinced that I am every form that people call. And he says that like this, we have seen many episodes where the person being saved did not even worship Swami, did not even call out to Swami.
In fact, what you say happened right there at the Vashishta Guha itself.
Exactly.
In fact, when this person was saved, he had not called out. But another incident is, Swami had been there to actually bless one ascetic by name Swami Purushottamananda. And Swami Purushottamananda in the Vashishta Guha, even to this day the Vashishta Guha is there. So it is recorded that when Swami goes there, Purushottamananda is a 85-90 year old sage. He's so happy and he places his head, Swami places his head on the lap of this Purushottamananda. And Purushottamananda is in bliss supreme. Later, this was a thing where only Swami went into the cave. The people outside the cave, they say that they saw a kind of brilliant light. And Swami reveals to them that when he put his head on the lap of this Purushottamananda, he had the darshan of Ananta Padmanabha, which is Lord Vishnu reclining on the snake Ananta, Ananta Sheshanag. But then after that, you know, Swami is back to the loving and gentle and playing self, and he asks Purushottama Ananda, what does he want? And he says, can you sing some Tyagaraja Kritis? In fact, he asks for a few Kritis, which, see, Raja Reddy Garu is a singer himself.
Mm.
So he was not aware of that Kriti of Tyagaraja. And though the one or two Kritis that Swami sang, Swami and Raja Reddy sing it together. But the Kriti that Purushottamananda asks for, that Kriti nobody knows. And Swami sings it. And Swami sings it with such melody and beauty that Purushottamananda is in tears. And in tears he tells to Swami, I think he only sent you. Referring to Lord Rama. He only sent you. Swami smiles at him, and in his language, I think, which is Tamil, Swami tells...
Malayalam, I think.
Oh, Malayalam. Mm. Swami says, no. He didn't. He has only come. Meaning it's not Rama who has sent me, it is Rama who has come. So when you say that any name that you worship, it reaches me, I think this other incident, which is not documented by Raja Reddy Garu in this article, but it happened at the same time when Swami protected his heart, happened then also. And that is, I think, the completion of part one.
Right. Part one concludes with that. So we'll go to the article that he's written in the second issue, right, Raja Reddy, where again he continues with his observations. I think one of the points that he makes in that is about Swami's miracles, of course, you know, how it is not meant to convince others. And he also...
In fact, he writes of miracles. He says very beautifully, he says, see, when you sit in a place, you see the sunbeams coming. The sunbeams are very thin, and possibly, you know, they also carry dust particles and all that. And they don't burn you. They just give you some gentle warmth, some gentle light. They don't scorch your eyes, nor do they burn you. And yet, looking at those tiny sunbeams, you can understand the magnificence and the might of the sun. He equates Swami's miracles to these. He says Swami is not doing miracles for show off. Just as the sunbeam gives us an indication of the glory and might and power and brilliance of the sun, Swami's miracles too are meant to do just that. Just to give you a brief peep. It is because Swami's might and power, if we are exposed to it, we'll get scorched. So miracles are the way in which tiny amounts can be given. In fact, in a discourse in 1974, we came across this while doing our research on who is Satya Sai. Swami, in fact, equates the miracles that he does to the fly on the body of an elephant. He says it's not a fly, a mosquito. He says it's a mosquito on the body of the elephant. So minuscule. That is how Swami puts it. How Raja Reddy Garu puts it is, he says, just like the sunbeams are there for the sun, so are miracles for the Lord. They are a small fraction and a representation of what it is, but by seeing which we realize the grandeur and brilliance of that. But don't think that the miracle is Swami in entirety.
And he also mentions of how Swami would convert anything to anything. You know, he would pick up a stone and convert it into a sweet. He would, you know, sometimes play with a piece of paper, make it into, you know, Swami would do that. Another devotee also had told that in the 60s or even in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
when Swami would give interviews as an evening walk, it would not be within, you know, a room.
Oh.
Swami would take one of the devotees and just walk around here. Probably Swami must have walked around where we are sitting also,
mm-hmm.
because it was all barren land and fields at that time. So Swami would, you know, very playfully just pluck a leaf, either from a coconut tree, you know, those long, this one. And Swami would start doing some kind of a craft work with that thing. He would make it into a peacock. He would make it into a... I mean, there was no miracle in that. You know, it's just that skill of converting it into something very beautiful. I think there are a few photographs.
I also think that there is one such peacock model with Padma Kasturi Amma.
Okay.
Swami had made one and given to her, and she very lovingly shows it.
So there is something Swami would make a deer and give it to some people. Sometimes what Swami would do is blow into them and it would become a gold artifact or a gold idol. So he was saying that, you know, where is that coming from? A breath can convert a piece of paper into gold, a piece of leaf into something more precious. So he says it must be coming from that divine sankalpa, and there are ample proof of this happening. And then he goes on to narrate one incident. And this was an incident which he had narrated to some of us when we had gone to meet him. I think even one of our colleagues, Saprakash, also was there when he was narrating this, where he would, the background of that is, you know, he would often ask this question that, you know, we all come to Swami drawn by Swami's love. And we all want to taste Swami's love, and we all have tasted Swami's love in some form or the other. But he would say, have we tasted Swami's Ananda? So we are actually drawn to him to be blessed with that. Because we all have love in some form or the other towards some people. But what we have to yearn for is the Ananda, which is Swami's, you know, which is our true wealth, which Swami has come to give. So he had narrated this incident in that context. He was saying that once he was sitting in Swami's presence, there were two others with Swami, and Swami was talking about some meditation and with some topic on spirituality. When Swami had picked up a piece of paper and Swami started rolling it, and he made it into, you know, just like how sometimes playfully we would do it, like a pencil.
A very thin roll.
Very thin roll. And even as he was talking to them, suddenly he blew at it and it became an ivory pencil. On top of it was a small figurine of Lord Krishna in that famous, I think he mentions in the article also, Tribangi pose.
It's like the Krishna idol at Vrindavan, what
exactly,
we have now.
Right.
It is bent at three points.
That's why it's called Tribangi, with the flute in his hand. So it converts into that. And then Swami calls each one of these three or four people who are in Swami's presence. Swami was sitting on his cot, and these people are sitting around Swami in Swami's bedroom itself. And Swami writes something on their tongue, and Swami whispers some mantra into their ears. So Raja Reddy Garu is telling that he doesn't know about the others, but he says, even today, if I can close my eyes and meditate on that mantra that Swami has given, within minutes I can go into a state of pure bliss.
Wow.
So he says, even today, it just takes a few minutes. I don't know what magic Swami did with that writing and what magic Swami did by giving that mantra, but that's one of the greatest blessings that Swami has given him. He said that even today I can meditate on that mantra and go into that bliss.
Oh, so that's him then. Right. Because in the article he writes it like a third person.
Right. He writes it like it was something that he had witnessed, and Swami had conferred. In fact, it happened to him.
I think that also shows his humility. I mean, why would not anyone want to say that, this is what happened to me? To write of yourself in third person, well, definitely requires humility. He also in this article narrates some amazing miracles of how Swami responds when a being passes on. You know, he writes of how when a devotee or one who has loved Swami all his life and is desirous of thinking of Swami in the last moments of his life, Swami actually goes and visits him, and at that time, him or her, at that time Swami goes into a trance. And we have read in later accounts as well how Swami's body just becomes rigid and just collapses, and whoever is nearby has to hold on.
Right.
And on many occasions it has been Raja Reddy Garu to hold on to Swami's body and keep the body safe from himself, because he would say, I remember in the interview with Radio Sai where he has mentioned how on one occasion Swami just began to pluck hair from his head and began to swallow it. And when Swami came back from the trance, Raja Reddy Garu tells Swami that, Swami, you ate your hair. Swami said, yo, is it? And then Swami from his chest area simply pulls out a full bunch, cluster of hair which is still wet, you know, which means it has gone through the digestive tract, and throws it. And these are the kind of leelas that Raja Reddy Garu has witnessed. And he says that when Swami goes, how do you know that he has gone to bless a being who is in the final moments? He says, because from Swami's mouth will emerge a cloud of ash. You know, Swami will start blowing out ash, vibhuti, in order to symbolize that the final moment has happened. And he would say that in cases when they are buried, you know, when they are cremated and burnt, vibhuti would emerge. When they are buried, he would say that Swami would blow out dust, and it would become so clouded that visibility is affected in the room. So this is another leela that Rajareddy Garu has observed, and he writes all this just to show that, you know, this is not an ordinary being, because the title of the article is The Facts About Babaji. So he's writing different things that he has observed, and as you rightly said, the thing that strikes us the most, though it is just a minuscule part of the Divine Personality, the thing that strikes us the most is the miracle, and that's why I think Rajareddy Garu is recording these.
Right, and I recall once one of the devotees showed me a picture during one of the Shivratri celebrations, must be in the 60s only. The Swami was in a pose where, you know, a typical pose where Swami was having a mudra in his hand and looked a bit lost, eyes closed. So it was a regular picture. That devotee showed this to me and she said, this is a very special picture. And I was trying to look, you know, what was special about it. And then she told me that Swami was in this pose for 3 hours.
Oh my
God.
He
had gone into a trance in that normal pose when he, you know, strikes, when people are singing bhajans. And imagine, for 3 hours they're sitting and Swami is without moving even a single finger, he's sitting in that pose during the Shivratri bhajan. And then Swami woke up, like how he comes out of a trance, and then he continued listening to the bhajans. So any number of episodes they must have witnessed in this period. So he's speaking of that. And in fact, in the Sanatan Sarathi itself, there is a, in this issue of Sanatan Sarathi, there's a mention of a very beautiful episode of another such, not a one of Swami going into a trance, but of a soul reaching Swami. In fact, it is titled The Absorption, where he says it happened in the year 1957, the 8th of November, right? Where it was a very pleasant night and they were all in Swami's presence. This is written by a devotee. Not mentioned whether it's Kasturi or Rajareddy or anybody else.
I don't think it is Kasturi or Rajareddy.
Well, they would have mentioned it, I think.
Yeah, this person must have chosen to be anonymous.
Right. So he says that Swami was lying down and many of them were lying around Swami. So it must have been one of those early years. 1957, just few months before the article was published. So they were all lying around Swami when they suddenly found that there was a light which was coming through the wall and literally crawling up towards Swami, crawling up Swami's frame, Swami's body, and then finally merged that into Swami's head.
The way it is written, you know, the way I picturized it was, Swami is lying down next to a wall possibly.
Okay.
And as it's coming through the wall, possibly it is like the light is becoming brighter as it comes closer. So imagine the wall to be translucent, not transparent, but translucent. As the source of light comes closer towards you, it becomes brighter. So it became brighter near Swami's feet, and then along the wall it moves till Swami's head and merges into Swami's head. And you know, you might have got confused thinking possibly it's a torchlight, because once Rajareddy Garu narrates that incident where he had seen a light come like that, and next day he was trying to recreate the same using a torchlight. Okay. And Swami comes and asks, what do you want me to do so that you believe me? But when they saw this and they were thrilled, they knew that they had witnessed something special. And when Swami woke up and they asked Swami about it, Swami informed them that a certain Keetamala Swami, you know, I tried searching about this being, I couldn't find on the internet.
Right.
Keetamala Swami from Malabar. Malabar coast is Kerala coast, right? So Swami informed them that he has left his body and he has merged into Bhagwan. And this was a thing that they were lucky to witness. And this is again recorded. And yeah, when we are talking about Swami puffing out vibhuti or dust, depending on how the person either has been cremated or buried, this is a case of souls actually rushing to reach Swami. So for the souls who are possibly not evolved enough to rush and reach Swami, Swami himself went and received them and blessed them. I think that's beautifully recorded by Rajareddy Garu.
And then, of course, he goes on to speak about those twin qualities of godliness that you already mentioned, of selflessness and desirelessness. He doesn't give much details, but there's a lot of emphasis in the way he is saying it, you know. He says, among desires, kamini kanchana. This is a phrase that Swami himself would use, of lust and greed for wealth. Kanchana means gold. So this is something that can be a huge influence on people. And he says, in my personal observation of Swami, I can say that there is not even an iota of this in Swami. Right? And gold. Of course, he's saying that everything is in his hand. I'm seeing that everything that he wills comes to his hand. Where is the question of him having any, even a bit of a desire for anything gold? And the way Swami would live, is the way he would look at everybody as his own children, right? There's no question of any of lust in Swami. But even otherwise, there is no attachment also. There's no favoritism also. He says that that's what I've seen. Then those people who think that Swami is more favored towards the rich have no idea of what Swami is, because there is no greed for money and there is no amount of favoritism. In fact, I think I might have mentioned this before. One of my classmates who was graduating, and Swami was telling him to go and take up a job and be with his family. So Swami was kind of convincing him to leave. He wanted to stay here and work in Swami's institutions. Swami said, no, this is not the path for you. You have to go back. And finally he agreed, and you know, it was a farewell interview of sorts. And at the end of it, Swami mentioned that, you know, you should also go and get married and you know, please your parents, because your mother wants you to get into settle down in a family. And this boy said, Swami, till now I've agreed to whatever you're saying. I'll go back home, I'll take up a job, but you should not tell me to marry. So he said, no, it's good for you, it's good path for you and all of that. So he was in a conversation with, where Swami gave him so much of space, and Swami was agreeing and, you know, consoling him and all that. So he said, for a moment I lost sight of what I was saying, and I said this, and now I dread, how did I tell it to Swami? He said, Swami, you say that your life is our message, so whatever you do, that is the ideal for us. Swami didn't marry, so I will not marry.
Oh, he told Swami.
He said, and he said, even as I said it, I said, oh my God, what have I said? And, you know, this is not something that... And immediately Swami said, aye. So he said, you know, I'd crossed the line. But then the explanation that Swami gave was so profound. He said that I was thankful that I made that blunder, because this explanation that Swami gave, you know, even as I was reading what Raja Reddy Garu was saying here, that's what Swami was explaining. Swami said, my own mother, I called her Griha Mammai. So Swami said, which means my own parents, I treated them as my children. Swami said, if you are in that state, then you can follow this trait of Swami. He said, for Swami, everybody is his children, even his own parents. Even the people, we have seen the way Swami treated so many other senior devotees who took the place of Swami's mother, or, you know, somebody who was dear to Swami. The way Swami treated everybody equally, and I think that's something that even we have observed. It could be a very rich person, it could be a ordinary person. You know, the very fact that we sat in the same portico where multimillionaires sat, you know, we were nothing. We had nothing to offer to Swami. That showed that Swami had absolute lack of, there's no partiality at all. So this idea of Swami favoring somebody is, and Raja Reddy says that I've seen him from close quarters, there's nothing of the sort in Swami's way he moves.
In fact, it is at this point that he says, mind you, there are no figurative fibs penned here to entertain the reader. The sentence that I read out, these words are purely the outcome of personal experience and rational judgment. Not a word of it is falsely written. In fact, he writes that when Swami is taking dust, he's taking wood, he's taking paper, he's taking waste and making it into gold, why does he need any more gold? He says that his need for gold is as strong as our need for the dust we trample on. I don't care about the dust on which I'm walking. So too, he doesn't care. And of course, he says, he also gives a reason as to why possibly Swami is spending some time, and this spending some time with, you know, the royalty, the rich, the influential, which leads us to think that Swami favors them more. He says it's not like that. He says when you hold and pull down a branch, all the flowers on the branch you get in one shot. Instead of plucking flowers one by one, when you just pull down the branch, all of it you get. And I remember in our childhood when we had to pluck mangoes, we would do this. One of us would climb the tree and bend one of the branches with our leg. When the whole branch bends, you get a dozen of mangoes instead of just one mango, which you have to throw a stone and pluck. So he's comparing these rich and influential people to those branches of a tree, wherein he says that if they come in, if they believe in Swami and accept his way of life, all their dependents also automatically accept it. So it is more like a a strategy wherein you can, what do you say that, you can get economies of scale kind of, you know. You spend some time with them and all of them, you know, because they are influencing 1,000 others. And when one heart is lit, that light from that heart will transmit to everybody. That's why when you or me say something, it doesn't possibly have that much impact. When Swami says it, it has impact because that is Swami's influence. This incident, actually a similar kind happened even in the Mysore Maharaja's palace when Kannamma, Mrs. Karunamba Ramamurthy and her family were struggling to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, when they managed to get in, they say, Swami, why do you have to come and stay with such people when you are so inaccessible? Swami then says, no, it's not like that, Bangaru. They also need me. And Swami says, you know, if they are transformed, everybody in the palace gets transformed. So that makes the divine task so much more easier. So that is the only reason, just like how Swami focused on the youngsters. Because the youngsters are the future building blocks of the country. Doesn't mean he is partial to the youngsters. He focused on the youngsters. He focused different areas depending on what had to be achieved. But that in no way speaks of him being partial to either men over women or women over men or youngsters over elders or rich over poor, nothing. He is absolutely beyond all of this.
Right, and the other episode that comes to mind is,
in this, when Swami mentions this episode, after when Raja Reddy Garu mentioned this episode, yeah, I just forgot to tell one more thing. He writes one, you know, because you are going to go to the other episode. Before you go to the other episode, I wanted to bring this point where he writes the full form of SSSB. Those are the initials with which Swami signs off always. Shri Satya Sai Baba. And here Raja Reddy Garu says, the first S stands for Sangikam. Sangikam meaning society. The second S stands for Samskritikam. Samskritikam meaning culture, music, poetry, that is the field. And the third S stands for Sanatanam. Sanatanam means the ancient. The ancient one, the most ancient one, which is the spiritual path. And the B, interestingly, B stands for block, he says. Which means, he says that anything that doesn't pertain to these three, Swami blocks. Means he's not interested in it. This is very beautiful, I felt, because Sangikam or the field of social work, Seva, is what stands for the Karma Marga. And Samskritikam, the field of culture, poetry, music, singing, all of this is representative of the Bhakti Marga. While Sanatanam, the ancient spiritual knowledge, is symbolic of the Jnana Marga. And rest is block. Raja Reddy Garu writes that Swami's interest is only in the spiritual uplift, only in karma, bhakti and jnana. Everything else is blocked. Which means anything else that we perceive Swami to be doing. If we think Swami is cracking jokes or Swami is spending time happily. Any of these that we think, that is only a means to achieve any of these. Because as Raja Reddy Garu defines, he says everything else worldly is blocked and only these three are given focus.
Right. Actually, the episode that was coming to my mind was, I think Professor Kasturi writes about this in The Living God. Loving God, I'm sorry, where I think Swami is traveling in the state of Kerala and the royal family, the king of Trivandrum or Cochin, I think one of those royal families which is still active, they send word to Swami inviting Swami to the palace.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when Swami, when there was a time when Swami was visiting a lot of these places, and Swami asked Professor Kasturi, what will the devotees gathered here do if I go and sit in his palace? Right. So then the Professor Kasturi said, Swami, the messenger has come and it'll be good if you just go and make a visit. Swami says, tell him that if he wants, there is enough space among the devotees. He can come. Mm-hmm. Right. And no special offer will be given to rich people. And when it is taken to him, it seems the king was so pleased by that because he said, Swami has given me a permission to come and see him. Right. Mm-hmm. He said, I invited him as, because that is the, right respect I have to give Swami, that I should invite him to my palace and give him the royal thing. But it is not that I wanted to have Swami for myself. He has given me the permission to come and have his darshan. I am so grateful. So he came and he has a devotee. When he sat, then Swami calls him and, you know, gives him an interview and all that. So even when we see, you know, it is very easy for us to see from the point of view of Swami speaking to this person because he's an industrialist, because he's a person of influence. From Swami's point of view, he's only always responding to
the devotion.
Right.
The devotee. In fact, I think this point came up when we were discussing Swami's visit to Africa as well, where Swami says that I promised to visit the home of a devotee. That home happened to be in Africa. What can I do? And then, you know, one more point, possibly this is the final point we'll go into, because actually when you read that article by Raja Reddy Garu, each couple of sentences triggers some memories, and each, it's so power-packed. And we have just skimmed through some of the important points. When I say important, it's like what strikes me and you as important. Because, dear listeners, that's the way spiritual field is. When we read spiritual things, what strikes us depends on what strikes us or what resonates with us depends on the level of evolution we are in, and therefore different things strike different people. But one final point that I would like to make from that article is, Raja Reddy Garu says that the tree of faith gets watered at the roots, which are personal experiences. I found this interesting because Swami usually says that your faith itself is the root for the tree of life. Why Swami calls it as the root? Because it is something that is not seen. You just have to believe that it is growing. You should not keep plucking the plant out at regular intervals to check how deep the roots are, because that will kill the plant. That is the nature of faith. You should know that it is there. But this is a slight variant, not a variant, this is a slight different interpretation, where Raja Reddy Garu says that the tree is faith, which has roots in personal experience. And I think this also makes special meaning, because many times it happens that when we are going through that personal experience, we feel so thrilled and we are convinced that this has to be divine. But you know, years later, this has happened many times to people, and a couple of times it has happened to me as well. You look back at your same experience that you have had, and your analytical mind gets in,
right,
and starts picking up holes and faults here and there. And suddenly you wonder whether you had an experience, or was it a coincidence, or was it, oh my God, you know, Swami said it. Maybe Swami said it because, you know, at one point in time, Swami comes and speaks to you in your mother tongue, which you alone know, and you're so thrilled. It becomes an experience. Later you get to know that Swami was speaking to somebody else whose mother tongue is also the same as your mother tongue. And you wonder, you know, did Swami just continue speaking the language that he was speaking before? And, you know, the analytical mind gets in and starts creating doubts. This is something that we have to guard ourselves against. We have to, because an experience is not about the word spoken or what we saw. It is a feeling that arose in us. And that feeling is something that is created by the divine feeling. And therefore, he writes that the tree of faith is watered by roots of personal experience. These personal experiences, later on when we look back, again, they're under the ground, they're hidden. But along with what we saw and what we heard, we have to try to enshrine and protect what we felt, because what we felt is the experience more than what we actually saw or heard or touched, you know.
Right. And he concludes that article by saying, talking of the importance of satsang, he says that, you know, that is the way you fertilize the soil in which you are trying to grow this tree of faith. So I think that's where that article by Raja Reddy Garu concludes. There is an article by a person by name Ramaswamy. Again, a very general article where he speaks about his learning, very similar again to what Swami says in his discourses. I think the article is titled Paths to Peace, where he speaks about what is the best way to spend one's time. Swami speaks about spending it in good literature, how you start your day.
He writes about paths to peace. He says how to escape your worries.
Right.
He says there are three ways. One is take refuge at the feet of a guru or Mahapurusha. Second way is read holy books and scriptures. And third is through Namasmarana. And he says
the paths are chosen by according to the swabhava.
According to your nature, you choose it. And that is an article by Ramaswamy. There's also an article by K. Kondal Rao and an article by Kasturi. Possibly we'll quickly go through Kondal Rao's article because we won't have time for Professor Kasturi's. In Kondal Rao's article, he is writing on the importance of the Sanatana Sarathi. He says that this is a time when the world is like the Kurukshetra battlefield. He compares it to the Sanatana Sarathi we know before, which is Lord Krishna. And he says that this is the time when there is so much of good and bad, possibly in the same individual. Because in the Mahabharata times, there were good and bad in the same family. In the Treta Yuga and Rama's times, good and bad were separated in separate kingdoms. But then in Mahabharata, it became in the same family. Now in the same individual, there's good and bad. And therefore, this Sarathi's, he's totally lost in admiration to Swami giving the name Sanatana Sarathi for Sanatana Sarathi. Right. He's saying that he is the perfect Sarathi. And in another discourse which I read, Swami actually echoes these, because Swami says that Hastinapura is actually the Astinapura.
Right.
He says Asti meaning
city bones.
Right. He says our body is the Hastinapura. And it has the five values, Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, Ahimsa, which are embodied by the Pandavas. And multiple manifestations of the Arshadvargas.
Right.
The six vices of Kamakrodha, Lobha, Moha, Madamatsarya express themselves in myriad ways. And that is represented by the 100 Kauravas. And we need the Sanatana Sarathi to guide us. So, K. Kondal Rao actually, in the article titled Experience of a Bhakta, he writes all these and concludes this article with a practical description of how to come to Prashanthi Nilayam.
I think that's, that's quite interesting, you know, how you can, full with details, what is the distance between Dharmavaram and here, Penukunda and here.
Yeah, you can come via Kadri from the Anantapur Madras trunk road, or from Penukunda you can come via Anantapur Bangalore trunk road in miles.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because I think many of these devotees who might be receiving Sanatan Sarathi, might not receiving Sanatan Sarathi, but probably even reading it, borrowed from a neighbor or something, might not know some of these details. They might have seen Swami when Swami visited their places, but might not have come to Prashanthi Nilayam. There are two articles I think we've left out. One is the article by Professor Kasturi about his first Chitravati session. That's quite interesting. We'll come to that. And then there is a patient story. Very interestingly, the second issue itself has a patient story from the general hospital. So I think those two we will cover in the next episode before we go to the third issue of Sanatan Sarathi.
On that note, dear listeners, we'll bring this episode to a close. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity. We are ever grateful to Swami for having this opportunity where we can fill ourselves with Him. We will end with a song, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
Shankari Parameshwari Shashi Shekhari Amba.
Shankari Parameshwari Shashi Shekhari Amba.
Amba Shankari Parameshwari Shashi Shekhari Amba.
Shankari Parameshwari Shashi Shekhari Amba.
Sarveshwari Jagadishwari Maheshwari Amba.
Amba.
परमेश्वरी शशि शेखरे अम्बा